This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hour number three underway. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
I just have to say, those new cop cars look sweet, don't they?
They do.
I mean, as they pull away, they look pretty sweet.
They do look good. They do look good.
Shout out to Greenville's Finest.
Yeah, appreciate y'all showing up and making sure. You know, Lonzo's got a lot of stalkers out there. A lot of people. Trying
hey,
to spend
you
a
ain't made it
the
in the business until you get some stalkers. That's how that works. Now, anybody in the Armada, we don't suggest that you stalk as a joke.
It's got to be a natural stalker.
Yeah, because it is against the law. I'm just saying, you know.
Kane texted the show and said, Justin Fields will do well for the Jets. You won't have to apologize to Darnold, unfortunately. Derek Carr needs better weapons around him, but the Saints front office sucks. Whoever gets Sanders will waste him. The year is looking better and better for the Lions. ... Screw the Bears. I appreciate you throwing a screw the Bears and not a my team for the first time at the end of that, Kane. But I will say, I hope Justin Fields does well for the Jets. I really do. I think he's got, again, this is the year that we're going to find out. Has Justin Fields struggled because he just can't process the game fast enough, which is a thing, or is Justin Fields going to break out and show a couple of franchises they got it wrong?
You don't want him to do well just because it makes Aaron Rodgers look bad.
Do you forget ago when I said I want him to do well?
No,
or do you just not care?
Do you want him to do well because it makes Aaron Rodgers look bad? That's
no,
all I said.
I want him
that's
to
still,
do well.
That's still you wanting him to do well.
I want him to do well because I believe Justin Fields got brought into and had heaped upon his shoulders the pressure of fixing an unfixable situation in Chicago. I want him to do well because I feel like when he got to Pittsburgh did him wrong by having him and Russell Wilson and all the drama that surrounded the two of them competing in a spot that, or making it feel like they were competing for a spot that I sat in, well, I was sitting at the time, but I said into this very microphone, this isn't a competition. It's Russell Wilson's job. You can go ahead and book that. And I got proven right about that. I want him to do well so that he can prove that he can do well. That's it. That's all. I think a lot of people think that my personal opinions about people impact the way I see them as football players. They don't. No, I'm not an Aaron Rodgers fan off the football field. On the football field, hey, man, if the guy can play, he's going to have a job, and if he can, he can't. I just don't think he can play anymore. I didn't sound this way about Aaron Rodgers 3 years ago when he went to New York. I was on the boat of people that's like, uh-oh, the Jets are back because I thought he was going to be a stud. He wasn't. The first year wasn't his fault. Achilles popped. It happens. Second year, he was okay. He was okay.
Recovering from Achilles pop, which is very difficult.
I don't disagree. But still, he was okay, regardless of the scenario. So, we'll see how that plays out. I will talk about Shedeur Sanders. We got your segment on the Carolina Panthers coming up here in the next segment. But it is 8 o'clock in the a.m. time for your audio blitz. Some of the best audio that we have heard since the last time we did the audio blitz. Let's dive right in. I'm always going to start with Joe Mazzulla if there's a Joe Mazzulla clip. The Boston Celtics lined it up against the Utah Jazz. Joe Mazzulla's brother, younger brother, is on the coaching staff of the Jazz. Joe Mazzulla, in a post-game press conference, was asked about lining up across from his brother and answer the question in the way that only Joe Mazzulla can.
Joe, what is it meant to see your brother get his, you know, start with Utah over the last, you know, couple of years here and, you know, see him kind of develop his own career out there?
Yeah, I mean, he works for the other team.
That was it. That was it. Hey, Joe, how's it feel to see your brother developing as a coaching prospect? Getting it going with the Utah Jazz. He works for the other team. That was it. That was his comment. Which is, let's be clear.
So what's wrong with that? I mean, you know.
I think the expected answer for most people would be,
I'm proud of my brother.
Super proud of my little brother. I'm excited to see him have his opportunity. He's worked hard to get there. I love seeing him out there kind of establishing himself as a young coach in the league. I hope one day he gets the same opportunities I get. I know the work he's put into getting to where he is now, and I'm glad to see those efforts come to fruition, yada, yada, yada. Hey, he hit him with, hey, what do you want? He works for the other team.
Do we know if they get along?
I have no idea. I mean, personally care. It's hilarious either way.
Okay. All right.
Hilarious either way. Let's see here. Tiki Barber works for WFAN New York, our brother station in the Odyssey family. Tiki, obviously, noted New York Giants fan since he played a lot of football there. So they talk a lot of Giants on WFAN, their local show. He was hosting with a friend of the show on and off the air, Sean Marash, on WFAN when they received a call from a Giants caller, and Tiki wasn't having it.
The problem here is the owner. They had a chance in that game against the Colts to lose that game and have the number one pick outright, but the owner told the coach and the GM, you lose this game, we lose all our games at home, you're done. And then he goes, you know what? If out of complete desperation, he's like, you need to make this, you need to draft a quarterback or do something that keeps you here for the long term. That is so dumb.
What should Brian Daboll have done in that game that would have secured a loss?
You don't try to lose, dude.
I mean, I wish you'd called earlier.
I wish
you had called earlier, but that's the most ridiculous phone call I've ever heard in my life. No player or coach is ever going to try to lose a football game.
I don't get
and
that.
If someone calls the station again and says they should lose a game, I'm hanging up on you and banning you from the station. No. It's the stupidest, most ridiculous thing I've ever freaking heard. So stop saying lose games, so you can draft higher. The draft is not a guarantee. Rookies suck too, by the way. So forget thinking you're going to change your franchise by losing games. It doesn't work that way because you end up firing people. Everybody has a negative connotation about the organization. Free agents don't come, and it all starts because you want to lose one game. But you want to lose one game, then you want to lose four games, and you want to lose 10 games, and you want to suck, suck, suck. And when you suck, 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 guess what? People say you suck.
Well,
so stop calling and saying lose games. I hate it. You guys drive me freaking insane.
Tiki was not happy.
Have you pulled the suck, suck, suck thing yet?
Not yet, but it's 100% happening.
Of course.
You already know it's happening. Listen, this is one of those spots where what logically makes sense and what people are going to do are just different. Tiki's 100% correct. Players and coaches aren't throwing games. Never have, never will. If for no other reason, then the stain of that is on them. Would it help the general manager? Yes. Would it help the franchise? Yes. Would it help the owner? Yes. Would it help the team in the long term? I mean, if you get the draft right, yes. Right? If the Giants cost themselves the number one pick and somebody takes, let's say hypothetically, I don't think it's going to happen, but hypothetically, Shedeur Sanders, and he goes out and he turns into, I don't know, Jaden Daniels, right? Then yes, franchise-changing draft. Jaden Daniels is a franchise-changing draft pick for the Washington Commanders. One year in, I'm comfortable saying that is a guy that is going to be good and have them at the forefront of the NFC for years moving forward. At the same time, nobody on that franchise last year was throwing games to get him or anybody else. No, it just wasn't happening. So with all of that being said, I get where Tiki's coming from here. It on one hand, like I've said, there's been a lot of spots where I've said it makes sense for this team to stink now. It makes sense for this team to tank now. The draft is, as we have established via the Philadelphia Eagles, the draft is immensely importante to the future of an NFL franchise. Immensely importante to the future of a franchise. However, losses stick on coaches and players. No coaches and players are going to try to tank. This is why the whole thing with the Miami Dolphins and Brian Flores a couple of years ago. Remember that? The story was that Brian Flores was told, go out there, stink it up, try to tank. We want to make ourselves into a better football team via the draft and blah, blah, blah. And Brian Flores refused to do it. And that's why he got fired. Again, that whole lawsuit kind of ended in, what, settlement out of court and just went away. But I don't think any coach or player is ever going to try to tank. So I get where Tiki is coming from there. All right. This one I just found amusing. There is a Steelers podcast called The Steel Twins. It is just a couple of Steelers, twin brothers, that have started a podcast about the Steelers. It's very much similar to the Panther Nation podcast. They picked up a bunch of listeners. They were live on their stream doing a pod when they found out that Devontae Adams had been picked up by Pittsburgh.
Is the chat?
Hold on, Danny. It's legit.
Adam Schefter.
Huh?
Seattle is sending two-time Pro Bowl wide receiver DK Metcalf to the Steelers.
Omar Khan, I apologize for everything I just said. I didn't mean none of that. Omar Khan, I love you.
Oh, my God. What?
The Steelers are sending their 2025 second-round pick to Seattle for DK Metcalf, who is signing a new 5-year, $150 million contract with Pittsburgh.
Oh,
$33 million new money average makes it the largest deal in franchise history.
I love that clip. You know why? Because nothing makes me happier than just pure fan elation. It's the best. Dude dropped an OMFG on it. He was so pumped up. That trade got made while these guys were doing their pod, and that went on for like 6 more minutes, just them screaming into the mic about it. There's nothing really content-wise to it other than I just love pure fan elation, and that's exactly what you got there. Keon Coleman is a wide receiver for the Buffalo Bills. We've talked quite about him. He was wide receiver one for the Buffalo Bills for a good chunk of the season until Amari Cooper showed up. He and Josh Allen got on the same page. I'm very excited to see what they do in year number two. Well, Keon Coleman has been making the rounds, doing pods and TV shows and interviews and all that as he gets set to enter his sophomore season. And he told what I think is a fantastic NFL Combine story.
Team's mad. I'm eating fruit snacks. I'm like, I'm home.
Fruit snacks, it's crazy.
But it's like, cuz, we just went over all these D formations with 40 teams. I'm listening, you know, but can I, you know, grab a little fruit snack every now and then? Y'all got all the snacks in here.
Just for sure.
And then you have a good interview. The team that just got you ain't trying to let you go to the next spot. They want to keep talking.
Yeah.
It's like, I gotta walk to the other side of the building. So
come on, dog.
Anything about it stand out though from your experience?
I was chilling.
No crazy interview questions.
Wouldn't have asked me.
Just like, yummy snacks and all.
Like, and that was only one team. I was like, damn.
My man said, "I did an interview with a team, and they had some fruit snacks, and I wanted some fruit snacks. And apparently, the team he was doing the interview with got unhappy with him." That he wanted to take a second and grab some fruit snacks. Now, I'm going to say a couple of things here. First and foremost, I'm a 40-year-old man. I love some fruit snacks.
Fruit snacks are delicious.
I love a fruit snack. We got fruit snacks in the house right now. I love a fruit snack. I will buy a fruit snack every time I go up into the store. Doesn't matter which store. They got fruit snacks. I'm buying fruit snacks. I love a fruit snack. It's good. It's quick. Not a ton of sugar. Nice little snack. Nice little sweet. I love a fruit snack. My man said one of the NFL teams got upset after I had spent time breaking down D formations with 40 teams There's only 32 teams in the league, which makes that especially impressive.
Thank you, because I was going to point that out, the fact that there's not 40 teams.
But, Four, yeah. My man said there's 32 teams, 31 other teams, because he was doing an interview with a team. I just went over the D formations of 40 out of the 32 teams in the league with you, and now you're upset. You know what I want? I want nothing more in the world, great one, nothing more in the world than for it to come out down the line that a team had Keon Coleman, who had a rookie year, had Keon Coleman on the draft board, and then dropped him down because my man wanted some fruit snacks.
See, I do have a problem with him complaining about being hungry. He should it shows lack of preparedness. He should have come to it and have already eaten. I mean, it could have been a long day for sure.
It is a long day. Those guys get to the combine at like 7 in the morning.
Have you heard of anybody else in the history of the NFL complain about being hungry?
I mean, I can't say that I have, but okay, also, how many people go out and tell these stories this candidly like this?
Well, I'm enjoying the story, but as a GM or a member of management of some team, you're going, okay, first of all, this kid is needy. He wants something. He's also entitled, thinking that those fruit snacks need to be his fruit snacks when they're not his fruit snacks. If we offered him fruit snacks, then they would be his fruit snacks, but they're not. They're ours, and he thinks that he needs to have them. There's a lot of red flags there.
I mean, that's fine. You just skipped on Keon Coleman, who helped Josh Allen lead the Bills to a 14-win season.
I mean, good for him.
Over some fruit snacks.
He'll never win a Super Bowl, but at least, at least he gets to win some games.
Find out. Doors open. Doors open. Point here is, I am really excited to see progressive more and more reasons about why teams are passing on big-name players. I want more than anything else in the show that we will talk about today than to get the story in 2 or 3 years that Team X could have had, that needed a receiver, could have had Keon Coleman, who had a stellar rookie year, and passed on him because my man just simply said, can I get some? I've been here all damn day. Can I get some fruit snacks?
You believe in your heart it was the Saints, don't you? That's why it's by. You know it was the
Saints. I'm terrified it was the Saints. I genuinely am. I hope not, because there's no reason for us to have drafted a wide receiver last year. We weren't great there, but like, we were fine. We needed defense last year.
Plus, he's not from Ohio State. The Saints only draft people from Ohio State.
That's also true. That's also true. All right, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to come back here in a minute. We're going to talk about the Carolina Panthers moves from yesterday. Then the segment after that, want to get to some baseball. Got two baseball stories I want to get to. One, Garrett Cole's season-ending Tommy John surgery. He will miss this season and at least a chunk of next season. So what does that do for the American League, A, and B? We have a controversial automatic balls and strikes situation that played out that's not controversial at all, and anyone who thinks it is dumb. I don't say that very often, but I said it about this.
Wow, so automatically okay, fine.
We'll see when we get there. Let's see when we get there. Rob Lonzo and you, the Rob Brown Show. It's a trap on the Fan Upstate.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Damn, 1-1.
So do you feel like I set you up?
1-1.
And that's,
that's on me. I take personal responsibility.
Okay, all right.
I own it when I screw the pooch.
Which you just did.
Which I just did.
I got a good shot of getting out of here without losing this week.
Yeah, you're 0 for the last 2 weeks. It's been a tough March.
I'm on vacation in a couple hours.
It's technically, technically Lonzo's Friday. But that just means we're taking this competition till 10 because it doesn't count if he's not here. All right. Let's get to some of the things the Carolina Panthers did yesterday as the free agency negotiation period hath begun. We start with Tershawn Wharton, defensive tackle, comes over a 3-year, $54 million deal for him to depart the Kansas City Chiefs and make his way to Charlotte, North Carolina. Milton Williams agreed to terms with the New England Patriots to move over, which means that Tershawn Wharton is going to take that spot. Now, what's interesting, obvious, is that the Panthers play about 60% of their snaps in a 3-4. They do have Pro Bowler Derek Brown as the nose tackle, meaning that Tershawn Wharton, is going to be playing some number of snaps, probably about 60% of his snaps as a defensive end in that 3-4 scheme. He did have 6.5 sacks last year. He is just 26 years of age, a young, solid talent to be in the middle. But there are some concerns about Tershawn Wharton. He rated in the lower half of the league on run defense last season. So finding players to stop the run is still a concern for the Carolina Panthers that has to be dealt with. And in a division, which you know Atlanta with Bijan Robinson is going to run the ball. You know that the New Orleans Saints, I don't know how many miles left on the tires Alvin Kamara has, but they're going to run the ball. You know that Tampa Bay has been trying to be better about running the ball the last couple of years. In this division, if Carolina wants to compete for it next year, and I think Lonzo and I have landed on the agreement of they absolutely can. They are ready. They're not ready to compete for any other division, but they're ready to compete for this division this year. Does it matter? Are they deep NFC playoff run yet? No. But, like, baby getting steps. There would be something.
Yeah, baby steps. You got to take that next step before you take that big step.
As Tiki Barber pointed out a second ago, your season results are a recruitment tool for free agents. If this team wins the division, makes the playoff, hell, maybe they go in as the last wild card seed and get a round one upset on the road. Now, all of a sudden, they become a much, much, much more attractive free agency landing destination, especially if that offense continues on the upward trajectory under Dave Canales. If Dan Morgan really is what I think he is, that bridge player style GM, that guy that knows how to talk and communicate to players in a way that makes them comfortable with the franchise. If all those things are true and Carolina wins the NFC South next year, even if it is only as a 9-win team, a 10-win team, that's a big recruiting tool. So they are going to have to get better, and we will talk to Rashad Beard about this in just a tick over 24 hours. He'll join us tomorrow, ordinarily on Thursday, but we're off on Thursday. So Rashad has been kind enough to say he'll join us tomorrow at 8:40 to talk about all of this. This is a good pickup for a pass rush. You're going to be playing him quite a bit at defensive end. You will have him play occasionally on a probably like a 3-style technique as a defensive tackle when you do walk an outside backer up and play more of a 4-3, which is, again, about 35-40% of the snaps in the Evero system. It's a good pickup. Not a great pickup. 13 starts in 72 games, played over five seasons at Kansas City. He was more of a depth guy, but Kansas City has had for a couple of years a very good defensive line. Guys that are depth guys in Kansas City absolutely can be starters elsewhere. So I'm intrigued by this pickup. Not a guy that has a ton of starting XP and certainly not as an end, but 6.5 sacks last year, just 26 years of age. Panthers re-signing Michael Jackson at cornerback. Secondary basically set now as he will play opposite J.C. Horn. We're coming to J.C. Horn here in just a minute. Jackson led the Panthers in pass deflections last season. He had 17 of them. He also saw 1,025 snaps so far, second most in the league. Played well, even though he had a lot of targets, because J.C. Horn's a lockdown corner on the other side. This is, to me, as you are overhauling a large part of the defense, this is a continuity signing. This is a signing to have a couple of guys that aren't just in the locker room last year, but guys that were on the field and in the locker room last year. Guys that can get out there and kind of be that vet leader. This guy's been here. He's done it. He knows the way that the Evero scheme works. He can be a player coach as well as a good player. And on top of all of that, you sign him for a two-year, $14.5 million deal. For a guy who led the league in snaps, for a guy who had 17 passes, good for a deflection a game. That's fantastic. And you got him, frankly, for a discount, for a steal. This is the type of cat that I honestly think could have very well signed elsewhere for probably 1.5 times, if not more, that money. This is a great pickup. We mentioned J.C. Horn, four-year extension worth $100 million and a $70 million guarantee. He is now the highest paid defensive backs in NFL history. What's that mean? It means this is your foundational guy. This is your core guy. This is your guy that is going to be the locker room leader for a number of years now. And here's why, even though it is a big contract, $100 million, 70 guaranteed over 4 years, I'll tell you why it's a big deal. Because when the salary cap number goes up annually, defensive backs, especially good defensive backs, their numbers rise in direct proportion. When the cap goes up, contracts like this go up. I think you got him on a similar contract to what a lot of other DBs that are shutdown DBs would have gotten last year. And I think you're going to see over the next year or two, I don't think it's going to be, honestly, all that long before J.C. Horn is no longer the highest paid defensive back in NFL history. I think somebody else is going to be getting that title sooner rather than later. I like this deal. There is only one question mark, which is obviously the injury history. He did play 15 games this past season, selected to his first Pro Bowl. When he is healthy, J.C. Horn is one of the best cornerbacks in the game. But over the past three seasons, the Panthers have played 51 games. J.C. Horn has been limited to just 22 of them. He has not been available for half of the Panthers' games. There are some things you have to consider in this. You have to consider that a lot of those games were, respectfully, meaningless games. Games that took place well after the Panthers were out of contention. Games that did not impact the divisional race, did not impact the standings, did not impact any postseason possibilities. Those are the type of games that when you have a guy like J.C. Horn, that you believe is a franchise, that you believe is a foundational cornerstone of your team moving forward, I don't want to throw him out there and risk him. I don't want to put him on the field and take the risk that something worse happens to him. So, yeah, he's been injured. Yeah, he's missed a lot of games. I also think that there have probably been at least a handful of games that JC probably could have gone out there and given it a go, but there's no point to it. You can't accomplish anything, so why not let him rehab, rest, sit out, whatever. If JC Horn does not struggle with the injury bug moving forward, this is going to go down as a great signing for the Carolina Panthers. You've locked up an elite top-shelf corner for 4 years. You did it for $100 million, 70 guaranteed, which I guarantee you there'll be, if it's not this offseason, next offseason there will be a DB less talented than J.C. Horn who gets this amount of money. I think that's a great pickup. I'm interested in seeing how that plays out. Pat Jones, the second linebacker from Minnesota, comes over on a two-year, $20 million deal. This is a situational edge rusher. This is a guy that is not going to add a whole lot to the rush defense, but it is a guy that you can put out there when you know it's third and long and you want to have somebody with an explosive acceleration rate off the ball to get to the quarterback. That is something that Carolina did not have last year. You now have Jadeveon Clowney, DJ Wonnum, and Pat Jones II, which means that you have versatility in the pass rush. The one thing I can say yesterday about Carolina's moves is that the pass rush got better. Definitively, empirically, the pass rush got better. You added two guys in Wharton and Jones that are pass rush specialists. Does that mean they can't participate in the run defense? Not really. Just means they haven't developed into that yet. But he is another cat who is only 26 years old. And if you want to put this into perspective, Josh Sweat, coming off of the Eagles, Super Bowl champion last year, got a four-year, $76.4 million deal with Arizona. That's what the going rate for a, I'll say top notch based on a Super Bowl performance. I'll say top notch edge rusher is getting right now. Josh Sweat, another guy, can help in the run game, specialist in the pass rush. $76 million for four. You got Pat Jones on two for 20. I like that. Now, he is coming off a year where he only had one sack and four combined in his two seasons prior to that. So he is a developmental prospect, but he did follow DJ Wonnum. I think he's more of a project than Wonnum. I also think he has a higher upside. So this is a developmental pick, but I think it could be very good. Carolina did agree to a two-year, $10.5 million contract extension with Tommy Tremble to keep the vet tight end in the locker room with Jatavion Sanders. I don't have an issue with that. And the center, Austin Corbett, has re-signed, which is interesting. Because there is one particular beat writer for one particular network who has done a really good job of being repeatedly incorrect covering this team, who said a couple of days ago that Austin Corbett was gone because Corbett wanted to go play for a contender with a locker room that wasn't split. Austin Corbett the next day was like, dog, I don't know where you heard that, but that ain't true. Signed to a one-year deal to keep the interior of the offensive line that brought Bryce Young's sack total from 62 in his rookie year down to 29 last season. They also kept restricted free agent Cade Mays, who started eight games after Corbett's season-ending biceps injury in 2024. So you have got a quality group that's been together for a couple of years now. Going to be interesting. Obviously got to deal with the injuries. Just nine starts the past two seasons. But if Corbett can stay healthy, you got a good line coming back that's now played together for a couple of years. That's big for the continued development of Bryce Young. Let's take a break, come back. Got some baseball stuff I want to get to you. We'll keep going with football and more on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. So you know on this show, we are big automatic balls and strikes guys over here. Big fans of the robo-umps. And I made the argument a couple of days ago that you now have seen that not only does robo-ump work, and work spectacularly well when called upon, but that it has been on full display for everybody. It is as simple as watching a single ABS challenge in spring training to come to the recognition and the reality that the ABS is remarkable. Balls are balls, or strikes are strikes. It's not that complicated. Well, we had an interesting situation that took place in the Dodgers-White Sox preseason game a couple of days ago. It is the bottom of the ninth, two outs, last batter at the dish. And this happened.
Winning's better than losing. And the Dodgers will try to win tomorrow as fiduciary. just strikes out. Did he challenge? No, he's challenging it. Why not? Don't keep it in your pocket.
Exactly.
We'll see if the game's over or not. And it will not be.
The proverbial loophole.
Bonus baseball.
By 0.1 inch.
I thought Pagano was going to use the challenge on strike three, but Fiducia did.
He should have.
Okay, so Grant Taylor, 2-2 pitch. And strike three called again.
Challenge it again.
And is he going to challenge it again?
He sure
is. Yeah. All right, let's see. And we're going to keep playing.
Well, Hulk went up there. Jacob Metz is going to have to hold on for his dinner plans a little bit longer.
So, what happened was in the bottom of the ninth with two outs, final batter at the dish. The pitcher throws a ball. It is rung up as strike three, and the ball game is over. Batter says, yep, hold on, taps the cap. They go to the review. No, it's not. It's outside. Ball two. Then they line it up and do it again. Pitcher throws another strike. No, it's not. Challenged again. Review again. Says, it's ball three. Now, it's 2-3. We got a full count with two outs, runner on, down one. We got an actual ball game here. Under the old system, we wouldn't have had that drama. What we'd have had was a ball called a strike to end the game. The pitcher didn't earn a strike. The batter should not have been punished with a strike as he correctly took a pitch to the outside. He challenged it. It corrects it. It's now ball two. The same thing happens on the very next pitch. It is once again challenged, once again overruled, and the batter got not one, but two extra opportunities to prove that the pitcher did not earn a strikeout as the pitcher did not throw a strike. How can you be against that? In order to be against that, you have to say, in this situation, just this one, you have to say, I preferred for the batter to get struck out and the game to end with a ball.
Okay,
you have to say that.
So I'm guessing, since you haven't told the end of the story, that I'm so what?
I don't know. I wasn't watching.
So you don't know after all that. You don't know if the guy got on base, if they won the game.
It doesn't matter.
You don't know if the next pitch was a strike.
None of that matters.
It does matter.
No, it doesn't. The impact. What happened on the next pitch is irrelevant to that. Was a ball called a strike to end the game, and it wasn't.
Did you just not find that out because it would go against your point if the next one was a strike?
It doesn't, Lonzo. It doesn't matter. If it was caught, the next pitch could have been 99 down the groove for a watched backwards K. That is irrelevant because what happened in that case was the pitcher threw a strike and earned the end of the game. He did not earn the end of the game on the first two pitches. He didn't earn the end of the game. That was not a strike.
This is like not reading the last page of a book. I mean, I want to know what happened on that next pitch.
I'll go look it up.
Are we going to have to wait till tomorrow to find out? I won't be here. I want to know what happened on the next pitch.
The reason is because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
It kind of does.
It doesn't matter at all.
I get this is all about your point about how good the ABS works. I get all that. I still want to know who won the game and if it mattered. If the challenges mattered as far as
it didn't matter,
because
the batter got two more looks at a pitch that he would not have gotten under the old system.
If he strikes out, then they have delayed the end of the game.
Who cares? By how long? 40 seconds.
That unruly crowd.
40 seconds.
That crowd seemed unruly.
40 seconds.
Okay.
They delayed the game.
All right, fine.
40 seconds.
I'm disappointed that you.
Sorry. According to the average of the challenge, 38 seconds.
Okay, fine. I just want to know what happened on the next pitch.
It's irrelevant. The reason I did not go look it up, because no, I did not watch a middle of the day White Sox Dodgers game on a work day. Unfortunately, I didn't have the opportunity. But the reason I didn't go look it up for a reason, because the reason is it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Whatever the outcome was, the situation that matters is
there was a pitch that was a ball called a strike to end the game. It was proven that it was a ball. They lined it up again, a second time in a row. A ball was called a strike to end the game. It was not the end of the game.
Was it the same pitch? I mean, was it put in the same place twice?
Outside, both times.
This is an advantage to the batter because it's been challenged twice. He knows it's a walk, so if it goes, it's a ball. So if it goes there again, he can just sit back and let it be a ball. And
you mean what a batter is supposed to do? Watch a ball.
So the ABS is giving the batter an advantage.
So what are we supposed to do? Sorry, pitcher. I'll tell you what. Because the batter saw that pitch already, we're just going to give you the strike. We'll just give it to you. No. If it's a strike, throw a strike. Or here's a concept. If you threw him that pitch and now we've seen that pitch, throw a different pitch.
Why would they call the same exact pitch twice in a row?
Because umpires are fallible and get things wrong.
That's not what I mean. I mean, why would whoever calls the pitch, which is what the...
I have no idea. Maybe it's the pitcher's favorite pitch. Maybe that's the pitch he's most comfortable with. And maybe he has spent years. I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't even know who was on the bump for this. I don't care. It's irrelevant. My bet is that guy has probably gotten so used to throwing that pitch and getting balls called strikes that that's just what he does. Every time I got two strikes, I'm going to throw that pitch on the outside because umpires ring it up. Whether it's a ball or a strike, I get the K.
Who are the two teams playing again?
The Dodgers and the White Sox. But again, none of what happened after or before those two pitches matters.
Hey, you're not going to change my mind about it, and you're not going to change a lot of other people's mind about it, but you did make it interesting, the intrigue, wanting to know if, even though I'm not a baseball fan, now I want to know who won.
It doesn't matter.
It does to me.
If you are arguing against this now, what you have to say, even if it's only for this game, what you now have to say
is... So who was up when...
I don't know or care.
Okay, so the White Sox won 5-2.
Great. Congratulations, Boston. Or Chicago, Boston.
So everyone out there who wanted to know, now you know.
Now you know an irrelevant fact to this story.
This was actually Saturday.
Now you know something that does not matter to the story.
Saturday, right?
Okay, Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Again, I saw the clip yesterday. I didn't even know what happened. Doesn't matter. I do now. And this is the argument. So now... Now, if you want to argue against this system, what you have to tell me is that you wish in this scenario that the Dodgers, I shouldn't say the Dodgers because most of you do wish the Dodgers would lose unfairly every time, that a baseball team, regardless of their city of location or name on the front of the jersey, what you have to say is you wish that they would have been given an L on an incorrect call. This is a direct L on a direct incorrect call. You have to say, if you are anti-ABS, the Dodgers should have lost that game on an incorrect call because that's what I like. That is what you have to say to argue against automatic balls and strikes here.
You don't have to say anything that you say someone has to say.
If you are arguing ABS, that is the situation you are in favor of. The Dodgers losing on a ball.
It didn't make a difference. Now, if it would have made a difference, that would have helped prove your point, but it did not make a difference. The end score stayed the same, so I'm guessing the next pitch was a strike or dude hit out because no one scored in that inning, and that was it.
It did make a difference because he got another pitch to hit. He got another pitch to hit. And that in baseball, any one pitch with runners on changes a game. He got another pitch to hit that had the original and incorrect call stood. He would not have got another pitch to hit. If he turns around and on that next pitch, he puts one 475 to right and two score, and now we got a tie ball game, now it's the biggest thing in the world. It is not about did he get a hit with the extra pitch. It's that he got the opportunity earned by not swinging at a ball. That's it. If he swings at that pitch, it's a ball outside and he swings outside, he made the choice to swing at a bad pitch. The pitcher earned a strike. That is the part that I am still having to like wrap or try to help y'all get your head wrapped around. He can still swing at that pitch. If the pitcher delivers a strike because the batter swung at a ball that looked like a strike, that's a strike. You don't take that off the board. This was a ball that did, sorry, back-to-back pitches that did not cross the plate. Therefore, they are not strikes, that were rung up as strikes to end the game. The Dodgers would have lost that game. Now, it's a spring training game. In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. But what if that happens in World Series Game 7? We're going to be good with it now? We're going to say, yeah, well, the game ended on a wrong call, but it's just the World Series. Like, no. What if that happens in the NLCS to determine who's going to the World Series? What if that happens to the Braves? What if Ronald Acuna's up there, and here comes the pitch, and he watches it for what he thought is ball two, and the umpire rings him up on a strike, on a ball, and the Braves get knocked out of the World Series? I don't know about you. I'd be furious. We can fix it. And here is the other angle of this that just got elevated. We added 38 seconds because the average challenge is taking 14 to 17 seconds. So at the max end of this, 34 seconds added to the game. Okay? So we added 34 seconds to give the batter the opportunity that he earned for one more pitch because the pitcher threw two balls. We extended the game 34 seconds to get it right. Now, imagine if instead of having to go through the whole challenge song and dance of batter steps out, umpire calls a strike, everybody's walking away. Batter says, whoa, hold on. I think that was outside. Taps the cap. Umpire turns around, looks up at the box, waits for the call. Then he's got to turn around again, wait for it to go on the video board. Then he's got to wait 34 seconds. What if we just let it call the balls and strikes? There would have been no delay there. It would have been ball three, line him up, pitch another one. That's it. Like, it doesn't make sense at this point not to just go full ABS. It doesn't make sense because in literally three pitches, it got proven that umpires are wrong. They can be wrong on the same thing repeatedly. The ABS corrects wrong calls to right calls and gives the pitchers and batters the rewards that they earn or don't earn on their performance. And it can do it el rapido. To say that ABS is bad just on this game, you have to say, I think that batter should have been struck out and the game ended and the team lost on a wrong call, even though we got shown on a big-ass jumbotron that we can get the call right. We can get the call right that fast. It's right there. I was going to say in black and white, but it's in black and hot pink to make it even easier for you. It's right there. How can anyone argue against this at this point? You know what? I think it's good. I think it's good that a batter gets struck out on a ball to end the game. I think it's good that that team lost on a bad call. Cool. I don't. And if you're asking me which one of those two positions is the better position to hold, this might shock you, but it's mine. And I'll stand on that. Okay. I feel better. I got it out. That's been brewing. That's been storming. I wanted to get it out, and now I did. You know what else we're going to get out? Information to you in the most glorious way possible when Lonzo reads his Sports Flash.
Completionist information, not that stuff that Rob just did where he only told you part of the story. Just say
this
it.
This was irrelevant.
It was relevant.
I'm about efficiency and cutting
okay, whatever. The Wofford Terriers are headed to the dance after a furious late-game rally led them past the Furman Paladins 92-85 in the Southern Conference Championship game yesterday. Wofford trailed by four with 2:34 remaining, but were led by Jackson Seville's and his four three-pointers to take the win. They were pretty three-pointers, too, by the way. Justin Bell added 19, and Dylan Bailey scored 15 for the Terriers, who will go dancing for the sixth time in school history with the automatic berth. Don Staley's Gamecock basketball team will enter the national championship tournament ranked second in the AP poll, just behind UCLA. The Gamecocks earned 9 first-place votes, 7 less than the Bruins, and 2 more than the UConn Huskies. Make sure to tune in this afternoon, 3-7 p.m. for Wire to Wire, Cole Bryson and Diesel Ride Chuck on your drive home.